to come out of that if you're KC, but hey, they battled, they played really good baseball, and they're just starting to drive more runs in, getting guys on and getting them in more often. This Padres team is, it should be concerned. Now, you just lost 2 of 3 at home to the Royals. The Royals actually won a couple series in a row now, as a matter of fact. Not in a row, but in the last week, 10 days. They've actually won 2 series now, so let's throw a parade on the streets because the Royals are starting to look like a baseball team. But the Padres are starting to fall out right now with the other teams in the National League. They're not keeping pace. They're not pitching well. Guys like Joe Musgrove are not showing up to the ballpark. And not saying it's panic mode yet. You're still early in the year, but you are now 4 games under 500, I believe, which is a good number if you're San Diego and you're trying to catch these big guys in this National League wildcard race. Because you're not going to win the division, not the way that the Dodgers are playing.
No, and they were actually leapfrogged last night by the San Francisco Giants with the loss. So Giants now sit 7.5 back of the Dodgers for the lead. Diamondbacks right between those two teams, 3.5 back at 25-19. There's San Diego at 20-24. They're 2-8 over their last 10 games. It's one of the worst stretches for a team in the National League. Them alongside the Chicago Cubs holding the two worst last 10 splits. And then there's the Colorado Rockies, which we talk about from time to time on this program as well. There's quite a few Rockies fans out here in Southwest Kansas. We're relatively close to Denver. If you're going to say Kansas City is close, that's about a 6-hour jet. Denver a little bit around there as well. 19-25, 6-4 over their last 10. Colorado had a really, really brutal stretch there at the end of April, middle of April to end of April. Really, since the beginning of May, they've been playing a lot better baseball. They sit at 19-25, another win last night over the Cincinnati Reds, 11-6. And, one more win, they're right there with the Padres. It's scary hours if I'm a Padres fan. And most of these Padres fans are revolting. You've got a top five payroll in baseball. It's Fernando Tatis, Juan Soto. The lineup is really tremendous. I mean, on paper, it is tremendous. Bogaerts in there. You make a big spend on Xander Bogaerts. Tatis 0-4 last night. Soto 0-3. Nelson Cruz, another offseason signing. He has struggled quite a bit. They just have not been able to drive runs in. I mean, just leaving guys on base, things like that. Jake Cronenworth has started to pull his weight a little bit more. He has looked really solid in the last couple of games for San Diego, but we're not sitting here talking about the Padres, but I feel like we keep bringing our conversation back to the Padres because they've been one of the most disappointing teams overall in all of Major League Baseball, in my opinion. And as we spend some time going back to the American League, looking at the AL Central, a division that we have talked about at length of being very poor and inconsistent this season, over the last 10, every single team, now including the Royals, is 5-5. Just tells you the inconsistency of this division. You got the Twins at the top, 24-20. Tigers, Guardians, White Sox, Royals, all under 500. The Tigers, in fact, second best in this division at 19-22. This is going to be a battle of who is who and who is the worst team, in my opinion, in the AL Central. And I know we were joking yesterday. We're like, okay, there's no way the Royals get back into it. We're not even going to entertain that idea. But now I'm starting to think with how poor this division is. I mean, they're only 6 games back of the Tigers for second place. They're 10.5 back of the Twins for first overall. The Twins, Tigers, Guardians, not the White Sox. I'm not ready to say that. All better teams coming into the year than the Royals will be. But there could be a significant change, in the next month or so with Kansas City if they continue to play a little bit better. I mean, I could see them maybe flirting with 20, 25 and 35, somewhere in there. 10 games under 500, I feel like is definitely an improvement from where they're at right now at 15 games under 500.
Yeah, well, I mean, at this point, you can look forward to division games. I mean, the schedule softens up for them the back end of this month. They got the White Sox, Detroit, and Washington the next 9 games, 6 of those being at home. They're at Chicago this weekend. But as we know, Chicago's bad. They can't pitch. They might be the worst pitching staff pound for pound in the game of baseball right now in Colorado Rockies territory. But they play 5,000 miles above sea level, and you don't. So Sox, they've just fallen off completely. Cease has not pitched well. Lance Lynn's been incredibly bad. and Giolito can only haul so much. And at that point, I mean, you're just a middle of the road arm. So it's a major concern. It should be a major concern if you're a White Sox fan. I think that they, I mean, just I'm stunned by how much they've just completely fallen off the face of planet Earth. So the Royals, they're not totally out of it. They're not in it either. I mean, I'm not going to go there. But the division's just so horrible, and the Twins are known for stinking it up a little bit at the back end of the year. They blew it yesterday, giving up a grand slam to James Outman of the Dodgers to lose that game. So they're pitching well now, and they're hitting poorly outside of hitting the long ball. They're good at hitting the long ball, but they're bad at hitting everything else. And if the pitching starts to falter a little bit, the division gets wide open because, again, the Twins hitting the ball out of the yard, but we talk about it all the time. That comes and it goes, and you have to be ready to get somebody else in there, find a more consistent way to get guys on base because these guys like Buxton and Gallo, I mean, they're not, and even Correa, I mean, they're hitting in the low 200s. Right now it's heated up a little bit, but they go and lose 8 of 9, 8 of 12, something like that, it opens it up for everybody else. And the problem is I think it's going to be more of a situation of who doesn't lose this division as opposed to who wins it, because I'm not convinced someone's going to go in there and grab it by the scruff of the neck.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Maybe the Twins at some point, they go on a 10 to 15 game kind of run where they're 12-3 or whatever that might look like. But it's not going to come because it's like they're going to be the aggressor. They're going to go out and get it. I think it's going to happen because they're going to go through a soft spot in the schedule. Probably some divisional opponents in there. But it does give me hope for this summer for the Kansas City Royals, at least. Hope in the sense that they may be able to play some meaningful baseball, improved baseball. Maybe that's the better word for it because of the opportunity that they'll find themselves in with this divisional schedule. Did want to highlight the Royals because when they're going to win, we're going to talk about it. I mean, that's what you kind of have to do when the team is 14-31. Nice to see them pick up a victory. Nice to see them pick up two victories and another series win against the struggling San Diego Padres. Now let's jump over to the NBA real quick. We're talking about the Heat beating the Celtics 123-116, a 1-0 series lead. Mark, I think me and you were both kind of into this series saying that maybe Boston wins this 4-1, 4-2. The Heat lose a little bit of their steam. It was not the case last night. I mean, Boston did outscore the Heat in 3 of the 4 quarters until Miami went off in the third, 46-25. There was not a single timeout called. That was the big conversation this morning about this game. A single timeout called over that stretch for the Heat. The Celtics did not try to stop the run. They didn't try to do anything there. Some people really upset with the coaching and things like that. Here is an inverse for you with Eric Spoelstra because of how good of a coach he is. And really, he's criminally underrated. He's never gotten a Coach of the Year award, and he's had some really, really good teams. Obviously, the big three, yes, I get it, but Spoelstra's done little with less, maybe more than any coach in the NBA. And to say that he hasn't gotten a Coach of the Year award is pretty ridiculous, in my opinion. Now, his teams haven't been great, necessarily. They are an 8th seed, after all, coming into this. Won the play-in game and got there after beating the Bulls. But he calls a timeout 94 seconds into the fourth quarter after a 7-0 Celtics run. That's the difference for me. I mean, that is the difference for me in this series, along with Jimmy Butler. Also, the depth of the Heat was really, really cool to watch last night. They had 6 players score 15 points or more. For some context there, the Celtics only had 3 players scoring 15 points or more, and only 4, I believe, in double figures. So that is really useful at this point. When you're an 8 seed, you've got Jimmy Butler, who is just incredible in the playoffs, right? Just incredible. And Kevin Harlan said it best last night after he hit a big-time shot towards the end of the game. Just saying, you know, Jimmy freaking Butler is what he said. And he's right. I mean, there's not very many words other than that maybe to describe Jimmy Butler and his play. But after watching game one, I'm going to eat my words, and I really do think the Heat have a better shot than a lot of people thought. It was being floated around Twitter quite a bit. There was a 3% chance of a win probability coming into this game. We saw the Celtics kind of collapse up on the 76ers, and maybe that was more so the 76ers not coming to play in game seven. But what do you think? I don't know, Mark. Is this series a lot closer than we had imagined, or is this going to be a one-off moving forward in this series?
This series is different than I expected it was going to be. I'm going to be the same as you, and I'm going to eat my words. It was going to have a little humble pie here. Look, I thought that the Heat were done. I really did. I'm not a big fan of the team in general as a just a chance to go deep. It's just a lot of guys that you're not convinced are going to come up big on a night-to-night basis, but they're finding ways to do it. Strus is really contributing recently, and you look at Jimmy's not slowing down. Bam had a good game offensively last summer. He's MIA on offense. I mean, like you talked about, there's a massive, massive coaching mismatch in this game. Joe Mazzulla is, like they've said before, if you've been watching these games, he's the youngest coach in the playoffs, and he is very inexperienced. He does not like calling timeouts. I do not know why. His excuse for it is so that he always has one when he needs one. But if he acts like he never needs one, then he's taking a lot of those timeouts to the locker room, and he just isn't about it. Doesn't like calling timeouts to draw plays up late in games. All that sort of stuff is definitely a little bit strange. I'm not saying that it's bad, but it is bad when the Heat opened up on a big run early in the third quarter after Boston held nearly a double-digit lead at halftime. Then by the time 2 minutes had played, it was already tied, and he could not get the team back on track. And that's my concern. I'm not the biggest Eric Spoelstra fan in the world. I think he's a good coach. Isn't Greg Popovich just because he's been around that? Or you see a lot of coaches that have been tenured a long time
right.
with one team, and I think that Spoelstra's a good coach, but isn't on the level, in my personal opinion, with some of the other guys that have been around a long time. Greg Popovich, when Phil Jackson was around. He's a good long coach, and everybody will think about the things that he was able to do with the Heat, but he was blessed with some very, very good basketball teams, and he's definitely doing a much better job than Joe Mazzulla is. And obviously, he's learning on the fly. But he's got to start to be a little bit more conventional with what he's doing, at least from a timeout standpoint, because his team is losing confidence out there, and he's not doing enough to get them back where they need to go.
Bill Simmons is piling on his Boston Celtics right now on Twitter. I mean, that's kind of what he does. He's a Boston guy. 2023 playoffs, Denver 9-3, they're 8-0 at home. Miami 9-3, 6-0 at home. Lakers 8-5, 6-0 at home. The Celtics 8-6 and 4-4 at home. They struggled with the Atlanta Hawks. 76ers got a win there. 11-11 in their last 22 home playoff games. A little puzzling. It really is. And that is a huge, huge, huge concern for me, for the Celtics, when I look at these playoffs moving forward. And really, even when you think about if they do somehow slide past the Heat, you're telling me that the Nuggets or the Lakers, whoever it might be that comes out of the West, I think it'll be the Nuggets, won't have a problem winning in Boston? I just don't believe that. I think that right now, the way the Celtics have shown up in games, they've looked otherworldly. Jason Tatum has looked like the best player in the world in games. But also, in other games, they've looked like they don't care. They look like they're not involved, similar to the 76ers in Game 7. I mean, that has been a huge contrast for the Boston Celtics. And right now, if you told me the Nuggets and the Celtics are your NBA Finals pairing, I'd probably say a 4-1 or a 4-0 sweep for the Nuggets. I don't know. Maybe even the Lakers. The Lakers with LeBron, I think, could easily be at a 4-0 sweep, even out of the West.
I mean, the thing is, and we've talked about coaching before, is, you know, we talk about there's a coaching mismatch in this series with Spoelstra against Joe Mazzulla. But, I mean, those are the guys I'm going to believe in, the teams that are better coached. right now, especially after what I saw from Boston last night. That's why I may actually lean Heat in this, the way that they're playing. As much as, you know, everything what you watch tells you Boston with all the players they have, but it's like if Tatum and Brown don't have massive games, they're not going to win. They're not going to get a giveaway game like the Sixers were giving them in the last series. They have to go out there and get it, and they're not hitting shots. They went on a really brutal stretch in the fourth where, yeah, the Heat couldn't hit a shot, but either could they. Missing all kinds of threes, they just could not get themselves locked in. And, I mean, it's the same, in my opinion, out west. I mean, I think that I'm not a big Darvin Ham guy. I think that it's hard to coach LeBron because he kind of ends up coaching the team to begin with. But, you know, he's gone through an awful lot of coaches for a guy that has been around the league as long as he has and has been as successful as he has. I mean, if you look at other great players, you don't see that kind of discrepancy, at least in my opinion. Michael Jordan, you know, I think he had a couple of coaches throughout his time in Chicago. Kobe obviously had a few as well. But, I mean, he's gone through like a million different coaches. And now you look at Darvin Ham, I think he's unfortunately more of just kind of there because he can handle all the personalities on the team, not necessarily because he's a great coach. And I really do like what the Nuggets have going on. And, you know, I think they're incredibly well coached with the way that they're attacking things. Mike Malone, I think, is just handles the team great, the way he talks to media, the way that he kind of addresses everything. He's very, very aggressive in his coaching style, and that's why I think that the best matchup in general for the NBA Finals would probably be the Heat taking on the Nuggets, because those are probably the two best coached teams left. And like I'll tell you right now, I think if Eric Spoelstra or Mike Malone was coaching the Sixers, they probably would have won the last series. I'm not sure if you agree with that, but I certainly do.
I agree. I think so. I think that they would have found a way. Spoelstra's really, really incredible in what he does. And I'm a huge fan of him. I think that when Pop is gone, that it is his. It's his mantle to take. It is the best coach in the NBA, and I'm probably forgetting somebody, and I'm probably forgetting a couple of names. I know Doc Rivers has been in that conversation. He's been around for a long time, but I don't know if Doc is there. Monty over with the Suns is really, really solid. Malone, really good as well. While you were talking about that, you kind of had something that sparked my mind. I looked up all. So here is, this is as of, what was this? This is 2022, so there's been an addition to this since then. LeBron James has had 8 coaches over the course of his career. All of them except Ty Lue and Eric Spoelstra have been fired while LeBron was on the team. So his first coach, Paul Silas, that was LeBron's first coach that was fired. Malone took over, Brendan Malone. And there's Mike Brown, who had the Cavs in a finals appearance, 60-win season. David Blatt was a European coach that came over, did a really, really nice job. Obviously, that was when LeBron came back to Cleveland. You had Luke Walton, which we know the story of Luke Walton. Frank Vogel. And then who was... Ham did not come in after Vogel, right? There was one in between there I'm missing. No?
Yeah, there was one more. I can't remember who it was, though. I'm looking it up because I know that it was...
I thought there was a stop.
There's one in between Vogel,
yeah,
and Ham.
I swore there was one in there. Maybe I'm way off. I don't know.
Let's see. I mean, you could be. We'll figure it out.
Nope. It is Darvin Ham. Darvin Ham took over.
Yeah, it was Ham right after Vogel. Walton.
So Vogel was fired in 2022 after a 2020 championship, and then you get Darvin Ham in there, who's done a, like you said, he's kind of just figuring things out. Ham is widely respected, but I do believe this is his first head coaching job in the NBA. Yep, that would be correct. He's a former Milwaukee Buck assistant and an NBA championship in 2004. Do you know the team in which he was a championship member of, Mark?
2004 would have to be Detroit,
that
right?
That is right. Yeah, he was a Detroit Piston from 03 to 05. And scored over 1,000 career points in his career. Pretty good stuff from Darvin Ham there. All right, there's our Darvin Ham down the rabbit hole, or more so maybe a LeBron coach rabbit hole. We went from coaching to Who's been LeBron's coach to who has been maybe LeBron's best coaches? I think, gosh. I mean, Spoelstra, obviously. Who's number two on that mantle? I've got mine. You let me know who you think. Of LeBron-led coaches.
I mean, I think from a standpoint of who is actually the best, I mean, there's a lot of good options in there, but I'm actually going to go way, way off of the beaten path here. I'm not going to go with anybody that is, you know, I was never a big Ty Lue fan personally.
Okay.
And I was never a big Vogel fan. So I'm limiting myself on who I could go with. I actually really feel like Mike Brown is a good coach for him. And I like Mike Brown as a coach. I mean, look what he did with the Kings this year. It's just he kind of was struggling with the whole power domination at the time. LeBron was in and out of talking about being a free agent and resigning. So I'm going way off the path. I'm going to say I really liked outside of Spoelstra. I'm not going to take any of the championship head coaches. I'm going to go with Mike Brown.
I like Brown. I like Brown a lot, especially, like you said, what he's done at Sacramento. I'm going to go with Frank Vogel. Vogel got LA a championship. I understand it was a COVID championship. That's not easy. That's not an easy feat. And, you know, he rocks a quarter zip maybe better than anybody in the NBA. I got to have respect for the quarter zip. I got to have
respect. Is this a homer pick?
I mean, I did like him on the Pacers. He was great. He took a really, really okay roster and brought them into the Eastern Conference Finals every single season until it got better. And, it is a little bit of a homer pick, but like I said, I'm a quarter zip guy myself. I'll probably have my Buffalo one on today while we're calling softball. It's going to be a little cooler, just 62 right now. Maybe some rain. Got to have respect for a guy who can rock a quarter zip. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Got to respect the zip. So maybe it's that. Maybe it's a homer pick. Maybe it's a former Pacers coach pick. But the only one on that list is a Laker that won a championship. So have to give some respect where respect is due. So anyway, let's go ahead and take our final break here this morning. We've talked NBA, we've talked Major League Baseball, we've kind of been all over the place, but it's been a fun morning so far. We will wrap up with some softball and baseball regional talk, also preview soccer regionals tonight for both Garden City and Dodge City, and then we'll send you on your way this Thursday morning out here in Western Kansas, set you up for a wonderful day of more area high school postseason action. We'll have all of that and much more coming up in a bit. It's the Morning Roundup. Don't go anywhere. Be back in a moment on 99.9 The Rock.